You're listening to the WYXR Archived, powered by listeners like you. Donate online today at WYXR.org.
WYXR Memphis, Tennessee, 91.7 on your FM dial or WYXR.org on what I like to call the World Wide Web. I think maybe I named that. I'm not sure. Folks, if you've never listened to our show before, it's called Songs That Move You, not That Move Me. And most of them do move me. But what I do is I bring friends in and future friends to bring 10 songs in. And we talk about those songs. And let me tell you what. Today is a very, very special show. I've got Amy Jackson on with me this morning. And Amy is a good friend. And we're going to talk about the songs that move her. But all of these songs are played on by who, Amy?
Wayne Jackson.
There you go. There you go. Well, Amy's Wayne's wife, and we got to know one another by doing the Memphis music tour at Elmwood Cemetery several years ago. And Amy is always so sweet to come, and she talks about Wayne when we do that. And I tell you, Amy, I just got to thank you again. That is so much fun, and thank you for doing that.
Well, you're welcome. I love doing it. I love talking about Wayne. What an incredible life he had, and this amazing musical legacy that we still have to celebrate.
Exactly. And I tell you, you've got some great songs. We're going to play songs from all over the place today, which is great. When you sent me your list, I thought, man, this is so cool. This is so cool. All right. Well, tell you what. Let's go ahead and get into it. What's your first pick, and why did you pick it?
Well, we are going to April 1986. I was finishing up my sophomore year of college at Mount Vernon College in Washington, D.C. This song hit the airwaves and blew me and everyone else away. It became a number one. Little did I know, I was listening to my future husband on Peter Gabriel's Sledgehammer.
Here we go.
Thank you.
Lord, have mercy. Amen. I tell you, folks, if you weren't dancing in your chair or you're sitting on your couch or around the kitchen, something's wrong with you.
Absolutely.
What a song. I love that song. The first time I heard that, Amy, I thought, man, Peter Gabriel has done ripped off the Memphis Horns. Was I right? I was not right.
No. Well, Peter was a huge Stax fan, like so many, well, probably all of the artists that Wayne and Andrew ever worked with. This was actually one of the rare times where Andrew is not on that.
Okay.
Wayne had moved to Nashville in the late 70s. And, of course, they still worked together, but sometimes they'd have a separate gig.
Sure.
And Andrew had one in Dallas, so he couldn't make the session. So Wayne went on to New York, and the rest is history. So the tenor sax player you hear on that is Mark Rivera. And if you've ever seen Billy Joel in concert, you've likely seen and heard Mark.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Man, that's a great song.
It is.
It's just a beautiful production. Man. Okay, all right. Folks, my guest this morning is Amy Jackson. I'm so glad to see your smiling face.
I'm glad to see her.
This is wonderful. All right, well, tell you what. Let's move on to this next song, your next pick. What have we got?
We are moving along in 1986 to November. A young blues artist crossed over to the pop charts with a big hit, Smoking Gun. Was Robert Cray, the Robert Cray Band. Wayne and Andrew are not on that song, but they are on that album, Strong Persuader. And this is my hands-down, all-time favorite Robert Cray song with the horns. And this band, oh, the groove is just so tight, and it really moves you, and I love the lyrics. It is just fun. Nothing but a woman.
Wipe the slate blank. You can- Robert Cray, Ain't Nothing But a Woman. That's a great song.
It is a great song.
That is a fine song. Wow. And so we were talking while that was playing, and we talked about like how they did stuff. And I know that Wayne played trombone on something. Did he play trombone on that?
Yes. So they had developed a system where they would put the trumpet and sax, and then they double the parts, and then Wayne would do the trombone.
Yeah.
So you get that big, big sound.
Right.
And
and they were on the road with Robert Cray, right?
Oh, yeah. They toured for years with Robert Cray, several years.
Yeah.
In the late 80s, early 90s, and then a little bit later after that. Mm-hmm. Yes, Wayne and Andrew were road warriors, man. They, wow. You know, from all the way from the 67 tour with Otis Redding and the whole Stax bunch to later, let's see, in 71, they toured with Stephen Stills.
Wow.
And Rod Stewart. The Doobie Brothers, they were with them for 3 years at the height of the Doobie Brothers fame.
Oh, cool.
Jimmy Buffett, 3 years with Buffett.
Yeah.
Joe Cocker.
Oh, man.
Robert, yes.
Very cool. Very cool. So Wayne saw hotels from coast to coast and around the world.
The world, yes. Yeah. Yes, New Zealand, Australia, Europe, Japan. All over.
Wow. So did you know you start thinking about like how travel is, and travel back then was not as hard as it is these days, because travel's tough these days. You know, you have to show up, you know, way ahead of time and all this stuff, and get your luggage lost and stuff. Did he ever have any like horror stories?
There were plenty of horror stories. Really? but you know, well, like with the Doobies, they had their own, the Doobie Liner.
Oh, really? You know? Okay. And they were flying. Yeah,
right.
Everywhere they
were. Or they'd be on the bus. But even at the top first class level, that's a hard life, you know, being on the road.
Yeah.
And you're gone for, you know, 6 weeks at a time, and it's a city a day, usually.
Wow.
So it's tough. So the first thing Wayne would do when he'd come home is take the suitcase and drop it in the laundry room and start doing the clothes. And
really?
And he'd clean his car too by hand to ground, you know, because that's not a normal existence.
Yeah.
So,
right.
He would.
Had to bring himself back.
Yes.
Wow. That is something.
Mm-hmm.
Golly. Oh, it's something we normal people don't know about. Wow. Okay, that's great. Well, we're going to push on here, folks. If you just tuned in, I've got Amy Jackson with me this morning, and we're talking about the songs that move her, and they are all songs that her husband, Wayne Jackson, played on. And, I see what we got next. Go ahead.
Okay, we are going back to Stax.
All right.
Otis Redding. Wayne and Andrew are on all the Otis songs except for These Arms of Mine. And they adored Otis. Everyone did. Yeah. And he was only here, you know, for 26 years.
Right.
But boy, what he packed in was amazing. And how do you pick your favorite Otis song? You can't. So I picked one that I love. And it's off my favorite album, Otis Blue.
Okay.
And there are no overdubs on this.
Really?
Yeah. This is 65. I think I'm right about that. I don't think it's 64. Yeah, and to me, you really hear that rawness, the spontaneity that was created in Stax Studio A. And we've got Respect.
When I come home, hey, 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 hey.
I tell you what, just to know that they were all standing in the studio together.
Yes.
And they rolled tape and did that. Who all is on this?
So Wayne and Andrew, their mentors, Floyd Newman.
Okay, yeah.
On baritone sax. Uh-huh. And Gene Bolex Miller.
Oh, really? Trumpet. Okay, yeah,
yeah, yeah. They were a little bit older than Wayne and Andrew.
Uh-huh.
Cropper, you know, Steve Cropper, Duck Dunn, of course, Al Jackson,
yeah.
Booker T.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a great photo at the museum, at the Stax Museum, and it's, you see Otis, he's leaning over the piano, so it's the back of him, and everyone is gathered around the piano, all of them ganged up, and not Isaac Hayes, and you know, I think he was on piano. And there is not a piece of paper nor a pencil in sight.
Wow.
And when you see the opening film at the museum, they show some of the footage from Motown.
Mm-hmm.
And there's scores and charts and all this, that, and the other. And nothing, nothing at Stax. They worked that song out. And Otis would arrive with the songs in his head. So he'd be singing horn parts to the guys, you know. So they just created it on the spot. And you hear that.
Yeah, you do. It's magical.
It is. And Wayne always said, you didn't want to be the one to make Otis Redding sing it again if he had just nailed it, you know?
Yeah.
So they were at the top of their game.
Yeah. Wow. Incredible. Now, how old would Wayne have been when they cut this?
24.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
23, 24. Because they were 26 in 1967.
Okay.
So they had the 67 tour of Europe, which was just huge for all of them and for the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And then later they had the Monterey Pop Festival.
Right.
And
yeah.
they blew it away. The Love crowd hadn't seen anything like that because they were in their suits. You know?
Yeah, they were clean. Yes. I'm telling you.
Yes. So, and then after that, you know, Otis was gone by December of 67.
Wow, what a tragedy.
They made a lot of magic.
Yeah, they really did. Wow, what a legacy. Wow, what a story.
I know.
All right, we're going to push on along here. Going back to the beginning.
The beginning. So I will quickly tell you. Wayne grew up in West Memphis, Arkansas. He was born in Memphis but raised over there. And he was in the high school band. One fateful day, he was at a non-school band rehearsal, and two guys from Memphis were there, Terry Johnson and Ronnie Stutes. They came up to him afterwards and said, hey, you need to come go with us. We're going to play the real deal. So away he went to Memphis with them to hook up with Steve Cropper, Duck Dunn, Packy Axton, and Don Nix. And Packy's mother was Estelle Axton, the co-founder of Stax, and that was the entryway into Stax. Wayne's first experience in the recording studio resulted in his first gold record, which we are going to hear, a little R&B instrumental. It shot up to number 2 on the R&B charts, The Marquees, Last Night.
We'll be right back.
last night. That is so cool. Who says that on the record? Do you know?
Yeah, Floyd Newman on the record, and then Wayne on the actual shows.
Okay.
So, yeah.
That is so cool.
It's a great one.
That's
it's great. A great one.
So I know I've heard you tell the story before, and I'd like for you to tell our audience how this song, right, is the one that gave you a new career.
Yes, this is the most important song for Wayne Jackson. It launched his career in 1961. For the next 50 years, he would be playing on songs that have never left the airwaves. And in 2018, this song, Last Night, launched my new career. I had been a litigation paralegal for forever, 20-plus years, and that background helped me navigate royalties.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, after Wayne passed away, about a year later, I realized we had let the artist royalties, not the publishing, the artist royalties for the Marquees for Last Night fall off the radar screen, which is pretty unusual for Wayne and I, but we did, and this is so common because when the royalty check is $1.73, and it can just fall by the wayside.
Sure, yeah.
And if you move and you didn't, you know, and mergers, you know, who owns the masters now? Anyway, I thought I've got to straighten that out, and maybe the balance is up to $100 by now. So Concord, I got to them, and they sent me the statement, and there was over $60,000 sitting there.
$60,000?
Yeah, for that one song for the artist, for the group. And Wayne was the only original Marquee actually on that recording.
Okay.
So next to everybody's name, it said unknown, meaning they had no account information or anything. And I thought, Lord, you know, I know Smoochie Smith and I know these guys, so I got to help them get their royalties,
yeah.
Which I did. And it was so much fun. And nobody could believe it. And of course, they all knew me. So,
yeah.
Anyway, from that, people started asking if I could help them find their royalties. And little did I know I'd been, you know, creating this expertise that so many people know. So that's what launched it all. But I was still trying to figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
And then I was having a conversation with Jeff Powell, our wonderful Jeff Powell,
uh-huh. Yeah.
Engineer and the vinyl expertise. Anyway, we were talking about Primal Scream. This was an album done in 1994 at Ardent. And he asked me if Susan might have royalties for this, because she's Susan Marshall, his
right?
wife.
Yes, wonderful.
Yes.
Vocalist, wonderful person.
We love Susan. Yes. We love both of them. And he said, you know, she sang backing vocals on this entire album. Would she have royalties? And I said, yes, she would. And I knew that because we had gotten paid. This is foreign performance royalties.
Okay.
Anyway, that's she became my first client, and that's how we got rolling, and that leads us into the next song.
Wow. Okay. And all right, here
all right,
we go.
All right, so this is Primal Scream, rocks, recorded at Ardent, Susan Marshall in background, a lot of Wayne and Andrew, and this is a rowdy rock song.
Here we go.
Just pull a hunch.
Man, that's a cool song. I love that.
It is a cool song.
I could hear Susan there.
Yeah.
And did Jeff engineer this?
He did.
Oh, man, it's beautifully done.
Tom Dowd, the legendary Atlantic producer, he produced and Jeff engineered. Now, there are two versions of this, and I couldn't find it on Spotify, but Primal Scream released the original version, the original mix.
Okay.
Because they monkeyed around with it. But still, right. Jeff, that's an awesome mix right there. But it's called the original Memphis recordings. Okay. And so, so that is out there. And they saw the error of their ways.
Yeah.
Just a few years ago and then put out the original. But it is such a great song. And so that's what got my business rolling.
That's very cool. That is very cool. People just don't understand the complexity of all of this stuff. And it really is very complex. But at the end of the day, it impacts people's lives greatly.
Yes. Yes, it does.
I'm glad that you've been able to go out and find people the money that they're owed.
Yes, because the songs that move me, you, and everyone listening are earning money.
Yes.
Whether the music makers are still here on this earth or they're not, the music is earning money. And for a variety of reasons, a lot of that money is not getting to the people it needs to. And that is why I'm in business.
Yeah. And you know, you were saying that, people don't think about, well, they used this song on a TV show or something. And so every time it's played like that, or a Walmart commercial or whatever.
There are two licenses. When you hear a song in film, TV, or commercials, two licenses. One for the composition. Mm-hmm. So like back to Otis Redding. Otis wrote Respect.
Mm-hmm.
And he will always get the songwriting publishing side of the coin. And if it's his actual master, he gets that. Or if it's Aretha, she gets that. But there are two licenses. And so people have no idea, you know, when you're just hearing a song. You know, the pharmaceutical commercials, you'll hear something. One of them's got Dancing in the Moonlight. Do we think everyone's, you know, getting their money? No, we don't. Maybe on the publishing side.
Uh-huh.
Because that's where people can be laser focused.
Sure.
It's the artist side that money gets left all over the table.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. All right, which actually leads us to this next song.
Yes,
right?
Yes. So this next song, when I look back, this is actually what set me on this path. In 1997, there was this huge hit show called Ally McBeal, and they were using Al Green left and right, and there was no mailbox money coming. That's what we call it. It's actually new use money, so it's a song, but a new use.
Mm-hmm.
And I called, called out to L.A., to say, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And they put me on hold and came back and said, we don't have Al Green in our system. And I'm like, really? Okay.
Wow.
Can you explain the system? So they did, and I told Wayne, I'm like, man, we've got to be majorly proactive.
Sure.
We can't think anybody's doing their job or there are enough of them.
Right.
Anyway, so the Al Green got me going on this. Robert Gordon had done the liner notes for the anthology, and that's what got the money flowing. I copied those, sent them out there. He had listed all the musicians, and money began to flow. This is one of my favorite Al Green. Wayne's on all of them. I like this. It's a little bit more low down and funky. Take Me to the River.
Dedicate this song to little Junior Park. A cousin of mine is going on, but we'd like to kind of carry on in his name by saying, I love to stay.
What a great song. Golly. Every time I hear that, it just knocks me out.
I know.
Wow. So Howard Grimes is playing on that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, that's so cool. That's so cool. All right. Folks, we appreciate you being here this morning. You're listening to Songs That Move You on WYXR in Memphis. This is all volunteer radio. This is radio for people who love music and spend their time putting on shows like this. And so if you would ever want to donate, you can go to WYXR.org, and there's a donate button there, and you can become a sustaining member or give us a one-time gift or whatever you'd like to do. But I will tell you this, it goes to a good cause. There are over 100 DJs who do shows here every week. So there'll be somebody coming in after me. In fact, David's coming in after me with the new Soft Shoe Show. And David, I'm sure he's going to be playing some Bob Dylan today. So listen in. My guest today is Amy Jackson, and we're talking about Wayne Jackson's career. And Amy has already told me she will come back.
Yes.
And I didn't have to twist her arm to tell her to come back, but she will come back. And we're going to talk about a number of things. So I hope Amy will come back a couple times a year, maybe.
Absolutely. We've only got over 3,000 songs to choose from that Wayne's
That's
on.
That's right. So, 3,000 songs. And folks, you just can't believe all these songs. We'll get to that next time, I'm sure. All right. So what have we got next?
Next, how does one pick out their favorite Aretha Franklin song?
It's very hard.
It is very hard. Wayne and Andrew are on many of them. But I like this one for a couple of reasons, and we're going to, I think it's 1972, Aretha's album, Young, Gifted, and Black. My mother is this huge Aretha Franklin fan, and so I have great memories of this album, and she would crank this song up when she was cleaning or anything, and the house was rocking. Please pay attention to the drummer. And you will note that the horns come in about midway through, and I'll tell you about this drummer on the other end. But here we go, Aretha Franklin, Rock Steady.
Rock steady, baby, that's what I feel.
Well, I can just see your mother cleaning the house to that one. That's
well,
great.
And still, Mom is 84. She is just awesome.
And I know her, and what a lovely lady she is.
She is. And I go to her house every Saturday to visit, and then she puts me to work. But boy, I open the door every Saturday, and there it is, Rocksteady or any other Aretha blasting through. So
that's great.
That gets her going.
That's wonderful. All right. Well, let's push on here. We are about 15 minutes out. We still got three more songs to play. What do we got next?
Okay. We are...
Oh, wait. I'm sorry. You were going to tell me.
Yeah,
yes, right.
Let's quickly about Rocksteady. The drummer, that's Bernard Pretty Purdy. So Wayne had the trifecta of drummers, in his opinion, and it was Al Jackson Jr. We've heard him on Otis, Howard Grimes at Royal with all the Al Green, and Bernard Pretty Purdy. And he did a lot of stuff at Atlantic. He's just prolific. Normally, I'm the finder of money, so people find me to find their money.
Right.
On occasion, there's a fund for musicians, and I was looking for another client, a new client, and I saw Bernard Pretty Purdy on this unclaimed list, and I thought, oh, my God.
Yeah, right.
Knowing how Wayne loved him, and I thought, how can I unsee that? You know, I know this man's got money out there, and I thought, how am I going to find this guy? And Graziano Uliani, our wonderful Italian friend, longtime friend, he started the festival, the Paretta Festival.
Uh-huh.
And we, you know, Wayne and Andrew and Rufus Thomas helped start that.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm not on Facebook a whole lot, but I happened to be on there, and there's Graziano with a photo of himself and Bernard Pretty Purdy.
Wow.
And I texted him. I'm like, tell him to contact me. Anyway, Bernard came my client, and we got him his money.
Oh, that's great. Great story. I love those stories that have good endings.
I know.
Yeah.
All right. We are going to Ardent. This was, what year? I don't know what year this album was. Before James Taylor was James Taylor, he was working on this album, Mudslide Slim, which was huge. And his producer was Peter Asher. They came to Memphis to do the horns. Terry Manning was an engineer on that. And, of course, they didn't know who James Taylor was.
Uh-huh.
They just knew that there was a long-haired, skinny, hippie guy in the corner making some comments. And so they sent him out for hot dogs so they could finish the session. So this is a great song. It's called Let Me Ride. Most people don't associate Wayne and Andrew with James Taylor, but here we go.
Thank you.
Well, I never thought James Taylor needed to become funky, but he did. Right? That's great. So they didn't know who he was. They sent him out to get hot dogs. Mm-hmm. Is that when Arden was up on National?
Yes.
Okay, so probably sent him over to the Sweden Cream, that little burger joint up there. Oh, that's so funny. That's so funny. Oh, folks, I'm talking with Amy Jackson. This has been so much fun, Amy.
It has been fun.
Man, you've got a million stories here.
I know.
Just a lot of stuff. And what a life. What
truly,
a life, yeah.
Truly.
I just, you know, every time we do the music tour at Elmwood, I'm just amazed by, you know, the stories that you have about Wayne. And did y'all, I guess, obviously y'all talked about that a lot because this was his life, right?
Absolutely.
And he wrote about his life. And you can find his books on Amazon. Yeah.
Amazon, his website, WayneJacksonMusic.com. Mm-hmm. Yes. And, you know, we had that big age difference. We had 24-year age difference, so we didn't look good on paper, but we were written in the stars. I mean, we were destined, and we were so blessed to get 26 years together. So, yeah, you know, his stories, because nobody can channel Wayne like me.
Right. You're right about that.
I know.
Oh, that's great stuff. All right, so we got a classic next.
We do. We're going back to Stax, Sam and Dave. This song is just a timeless song. And when I talked about new use money, this is our number one new use that we get. Hold On, I'm Coming. It's used over and over. And we have the contract for this. And back then, you know, all the Stax and American and Royal, the musicians were members of the union, the AF, American Federation of Musicians. And that is critical evidence. Mm-hmm. In getting paid. Anyway, we have the contract on that. That was 1965, or was it 66? But that back then, a session was $65 for three songs.
Really?
So this was Hold On, I'm Coming, and two other songs. Wow. So new use money is not big money, but boy, when you made $65 for it, and then you make some more money along the way, it's nice. Here we go.
Oh,
Well, I would say that is arguably the greatest horn intro in American music, right?
Absolutely.
Sam and Dave, hold on, I'm coming. With Wayne Jackson. All right. All right, folks, we got one more song to go. Amy, I want to thank you so much for being here. This has been so much fun.
It has been fun. Thank you for having me, Willie. I'm happy to do this, and we'll come back.
There you go. There you go. Okay, what have we got to play us out?
To play us out, we have Steve Winwood, Roll With It. Steve was about 15, 16, and was in the audience during the Stax Volt tour at one of the London shows. Yeah.
Wow.
And was so influenced by all of that. And 2 decades later, he could hire Wayne and Andrew to put their magic on this great song, Roll With It.
Here we go. And we'll see you next week, folks. 9 o'clock every Monday morning, Songs at Movie, WYXR.